make chairs for women. You know, it's really unbelievable that we talk, you know, I always say that men and women, we're all important, we're all equal, we're just different, but we never think about that. We recently were on tour. I have to detour for a minute because this really pisses me off. We were on tour with vets, and we brought all young girls creating STEM, you know, creating prosthetic legs for women with prosthetic legs and arms. And they said, you know, while utility is the same for men and women, you need to move your leg, you need to move your arm, cosmetic is utility. And we suffer severe depression because they are so ugly. So we had young girls making coverlets on, you know, prosthetic legs that lit up. They were so beautiful. And we did tattoo art on them and made them hot pink and, you know, all kinds of, you know, beautiful things. And a woman that was in the highest ranking Air Force came in and she was rocking this jumpsuit. She looked awesome, you know, in her fatigues. And she said, "You see this?" She said, "When men have to go to the bathroom, you know, in combat, they just unzip it and go." She says, "We used to take the whole thing off," which makes no sense. They've never made uniforms for women. You know, that's so crazy. And it's because we've never talked about that or addressed that or said, you know, we're all in combat today. We all deserve to have uniforms that can still be the, you know, the ugly green, but at least they should accommodate, you know, our anatomical issues. So anyways, I just had to share that. So with that, we have amazing conversationalists here today. And what I would rather do is have you introduce yourself and not give me a quick 1 second on what you do, but more importantly, tell me why you're up here talking about resilience. Give me a little personal story of how resilience, you know, really has impacted you in any way. Give me a little story.
Hi, I'm Deborah Neumeier. I am a TV and film producer, and I have been for decades. I also had an equally rewarding career as a mother of four children. Throughout that time, I've had some pauses in my career. As many of you will, as 33% of all college-educated women drop out of the workforce for an average of 3 years, and usually it's during the most critical part of their career trajectory. I dropped out at different times, largely because I had children, and kept on going back and kept on trying to figure out what the new brand was of Deborah Neumeier. And then 11 years ago, my husband passed away, and I became the mother and the father and the sole breadwinner, and I had to go back to work. And it was, I would have to say that in terms of resilience, it's one of those things when the shit falls, you just pick yourself up and keep going. And probably I learned more from deep tragedy than I did from just having a average career trajectory, which I climbed the ladder linearly. I fell off, I ran around, I picked up after my kids, I found a great project that would, again, catapult me into making a TV show. But the truth is, resilience is one of those things that you just have to get up every morning and dig deep and say, I'm getting up every morning and I'm gonna dig deep. And I'm still doing that every single day. I'm trying to figure out what is the next brand for myself.
And your book is called?
Oh, and so in the process
of that. I'm just promoting you. I'm the promoter.
In the process
now.
Of that, I realized that I wasn't alone, that there were lots of other women who were sitting behind me in the carpool lane waiting to pick up their kids. I was not alone in women who were taking care of their family and who had opted out for one reason or another, or shifted careers, downshifted themselves a little, somehow had become less careerist than they wanted to be. So I wrote a book called Moms for Hire, 8 Steps to Kickstart Your Next Career. And now I'm not only a producer, a mother, but I'm also an author. The book is on Amazon, and it's designed for women who want to get find their career mojo again, who want to figure out what it is that they do best and hopefully grab occupational happiness, which will make everybody happier and the world a better place.
You're one badass chick, that's all I want to say.
I'm just following in your footsteps.
Thank you. Christina.
Hi, my name's Christina Mancini-Jones. Still getting used to that Jones at the end.
And I was like, add the Jones.
Exactly. My role at Fox is one that's newly created. I'm a creative executive. I've been at Fox almost 16 years this month. My entire career has been in creative, but as I, in my last role in franchise, I quickly learned that where audiences were was in the digital space, and that in order to remain agile and relevant in this new media landscape, we really needed to be smarter about the technology solutions that we were exploring. I ended up finding myself more in the technology building than in the film building, and ultimately they created this role for me where I can look at emerging technology and existing technology and find solutions for us that can help not only drive story and creative, but also the business of telling story. Resilience. I'm a Black woman, so I actually don't know anything other than being resilient. Emma, thank you. So when I moved over to the technology vertical, I quickly started hearing about a conversation that I was not familiar with because I was in creative, and it was about the lack of women in technology. And again, being a woman of color, I'm used to being the only woman in the room, but and that is an evergreen conversation that we are trying to address in Hollywood. However, the lack of women in technology is also an evergreen conversation, but it's one that really needs to be addressed now because there's new technologies and systems that are being created with only one voice, and I think that's really scary to me. So, and I'm here because technology rocks, and one of my favorite people, Alex, invited me to join, and here I am.
Yay, thank you. By the way, I think one of the things that we're working really hard on is getting more visibility. You know, women have been written out of history or just invisible, and bringing yourself forward front and center and using your voice and being so visible hopefully will help us change the equation across the board. So thank you for that. That's amazing. And then Cheryl.
Hi there. I'm Cheryl Hunter. I am considered an expert in resilience. I comment on national news stories on, you know, when bad things happen, most of the time. That's what news is about. I comment on how do people recover? How does the victim recover, their family recover? How do we collectively deal in a world where the game's ever changing and it's hard to find stable footing? And I didn't set out to become an expert in resilience. I don't think I ever even knew what it was, other than, you know, it's something that's hard won. But as life goes, you know, it takes a lot of circuitous kind of twisty, turny paths, and I became an expert in something I had never set out to become an expert in. I suffered something traumatic as a kid. I'll tell you more about that. I'm doing a keynote a little bit later on in a workshop. But as a result, I was left trying to figure it out, or really kind of reinvent the wheel and figure out how do we start over again? How do we rise from the ashes when everything we know is gone? And I, one of the things I did was take a lot of programs and do a lot of coaching and read a lot of books, and I just felt that something was missing. And so I became fascinated with the study of resilience and freedom and why some people could overcome adversity and challenges while others didn't. In similar circumstances, one would do well and one would end up bitter or stuck in some regard. So I just started interviewing people and trying to get to the source of why that is. And I applied everything they said to myself first. That was my first case study, but since I've worked with and coached over 250,000 people. And I created a framework that helps anybody overcome adversity. And I've pulled together a team of the smartest coaches I knew, and we've been working to help people turn around their results, their lives, their companies, their organizations. And that's what I've been doing ever since. And resilience, it's really become something I love to give away, because often our relationship to it is like, ooh, when I say I'm going to speak on resilience, people go, eh, like, we don't want to have to go through the eye of the needle to get there. There's no arguing that we'd love to be the person on the other side of having gone through that journey, but, you know, by and large, we don't necessarily want to go there. So I want to make it easier to come by. Thank you.
That's awesome. I am just sitting here thinking, as you're speaking about resilience and the topic career resilience, saying yes to uncertainty and navigating change, is that an oxymoron for women? Like, you know, if we say we have that voice in our head, you know, if you need to do 10 things and a guy can do 6 out of 10, he's like, yep, I got this. And if a woman can't do 10 out of 10, she's like, I'm not qualified. And we step back. And, you know, my girlfriend, Wendy Clark, says, just say, shut that bitch up in your head and make it go away. Arianna Huffington says, you know, it's that bossy roommate that, you know, you've just got to push, you know, out of your head. So is that an oxymoron, really? Like, we're saying that we don't have this confidence in ourselves, yet I think it takes a lot of confidence to be resilient and say yes to uncertainty when we have that kind of doubt. So how do we navigate with that? Like, that's confusing to me. So can we just go down, you know, randomly answer as you wish? How do we move forward with that? It's complicated.
I think the hardest thing for me to realize was that my life was going to change as I moved through it, that I was going to be a different person in my 20s than I was going to be in my 30s. And I always thought that when I grew up, okay, you're grown up, you're done, here you go. You got your husband, you got your kids, you got the job that you're going to. And then I heard this great story by Nora Ephron, who to me is the feminist icon of for all of us, our modern women. She, in the 60s, decided Newsweek wasn't going to publish her articles under her name, so she quit. In the 70s, she told everybody that her husband had cheated on her and that she was moving out. In the 80s, she told us we were all allowed to scream loudly and have our orgasms however we wanted to. And she just kept
on. This is getting to be a racy conversation. What? Now. Where are we going to go
with that? This is why she's a cultural icon. This is why 100%. She's a true entertainment feminist. And I never met her, but she also always cooked great meals. And one of the things she would do at every single dinner table, because she loved to eat, was she would go around to everybody and she would say, okay, write 5 words that describe you. Write these 5 words down that describe who you are right now, and then we'll share them all among each other. And she would do it for herself too, and she was at one point Wellesley graduate, Democrat, single, New Yorker. Then she was, 10 years later, she was none of those things. She was a mother, a wife, a journalist, a feminist. She was divorced suddenly. Then 10 years later, she's something else. She's a writer, she's a director, but every single moment, we're allowed to change. We're allowed to embrace change and not be frightened by it. And I think that, yes, you have to brand yourself. Yes, you have to know who you are at any given time. You have to know what your currency is and be able to say, hey, this is what I do and I do this well, and here's my tragedy, and I have tragedies too. But the package is going to change, and you have to be comfortable with that. And that will be your power, is not worrying about the staticness of who we are, always reaching.
I think my superpower is I'm curious, and I'm not afraid to ask questions. I think the way to move forward in any space is you have to let go of ego, because it's your ego that gets in the way. You're afraid to raise your hand and have an idea because you worry that someone's going to ridicule you. But to your point, men actually don't seem to have that same problem. I read an article recently that said, try eliminating just from your vocabulary. It's a word that women tend to overuse. Like, can I just have a little bit of your time? What do you think if we just try this? It helps your communications be a lot clearer, and you're coming from a much more powerful place. And I think the resilience, uncertainty, what's the worst that can happen? It's okay to fail. You can't fail all the time, but it is okay to fail. One of my supervisors, when I was in international, would joke. He said, Christina doesn't give a shit. Sorry, cussing. She'll throw 100 ideas at the wall, but all of them don't stick. Some of them are crazy, but out of those, like 2, 3, those are going to be really worth exploring. So if you think about all the times that you've had an idea or thought of something, and then you didn't do anything about it, and the frustration you had when someone else spoke up on it, and it was an incredible success, that should motivate you.
Right. It's the worst.
That should motivate you to start having a voice. Because there's a lot of conversation about being at the table, which is, it's interesting, the further up you go in your career, you realize it's a bit of a mythical table, because you can create your opportunity to have these conversations on a daily basis with the people that are relevant.
If I listened to everyone else, I would not be where I am today. You know, I always say, if you don't try, you'll never know. And when I had this idea to pioneer online research and move it from offline to online in a day and age where only wealthy old men with broadband were online, and everyone told me I was wrong and it wasn't the right time, I could have listened, or I could have taken that scary step forward by myself, and thank God I did, because I was right. And I could have been wrong. Worst thing that could have happened, I would have been wrong, but I actually was right, and I would have never known had I not have tried it. So I really do appreciate what you're saying about...
I mean, imagine if they just wrote my job description and sent a recruiter out to fill it. I wouldn't be sitting here, for sure. But it was a passion that I had for this space that allowed me to step into it. And it has been an incredible learning experience. I went from being the smartest woman about technology in a creative room to being the least intelligent person around some technology solutions in a room. And that's where you have to just let go of your ego and try to adapt and learn and be humble.
I think we also need permission. You know, when you're innovating, there's a good chance you might fail before you succeed. I mean, I don't know how many times Einstein tried, you know, to do what he had to do, and thank God he kept pushing forward. So I think we need permission to fail if we are in an innovation role, so that we don't apologize for trying new things, you know, which are not tested and true.
Well, and I was recently, luckily, at an event that Shelley threw in New York for the female quotient, where there were 1,000 women, and Megyn Kelly spoke. And one of the things she said was, when she's interrupted, and when she's not heard, she goes like this. I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet. Or I'm over here. You just have to say that, because so many times when you're not being heard, it's because you're not speaking up or not.
Bill, tell us some of your tips. I mean, you talked about resilience tips. Give us a couple of those.
Well, I'm going to back up for just one moment to confidence, if I may. We're going to do some actionable tips when I do the workshop in a minute, in a few minutes. But there's, you mentioned the word permission, and I get it. What you, in the context you were saying it, is we give ourselves permission to fail, but it triggered something for me, and I started thinking about, there's oftentimes something we get stuck in as women, and I don't mean to exclude you as men, that it may be relevant as well, but generally I'm coaching women. And I see it. Tell me if you can all relate to this, where it's as though oftentimes we're waiting for permission to be as big and as bold and as audacious as we want to be, as we authentically are inside. Like, somebody grants us that and we'll step up and take the mantle of leader rather than self-generating that. And yes, there's not gender parity in many things. Like Shelley brought up the brilliant example of suits not even made anatomically in a way that women can relieve themselves. And yet, the world is the way the world is right now. If we charge ourselves with, I choose me, I delegate me, I pick me. To do what? To do whatever my voice is committed to doing, to be that leader. It's this brilliant day that we're at, where we can create our own brand in all ways. It used to be, you know, you got your brand at work and you're renowned for something. You're reliable for X. Now you can do that on a bigger scale and bring your brand to work. I mean, publish your own books, make your own, you know, video channels or whatever. Be renowned for something that you provide to your coworkers. Delegate yourself. There's this huge opportunity to do that right now, rather than waiting to be chosen. So I charge you with making yourself the leader. You're dreaming and waiting for somebody else to appoint you as.
You know, it's just interesting because I did a lot of coaching with senior executive women, helping them get on public boards. And, you know, in order to get on a public board, you have to create a brag-a-log and talk about yourself and not what you do and how many years experience, but what is your superpower? And, you know, just what you talked about. And I found that a lot of women, you know, have a hard time bragging about themselves, you know, because we're either too nice or we're too this or we're too that, you know, and we don't like to say, I'm great at this. And it's just so important to not think about being too nice. You're actually silly if you can't be able to say, I'm great at this, and understand that about yourself. It's just very important in, you know, anything you do. Sheryl Sandberg does something really interesting, just to your point, Sheryl, what you talked about. In this room, we have a lot of men and women. How many of you men have ever been told you're too bossy? How many women have ever been told you're too bossy? I mean, isn't that just fascinating? You know, you think that this shit doesn't happen, but it's really true. So Sheryl says, just to what you said, Sheryl Sandberg, she says, it's not bossy, you have executive presence. Redefine the terminology and, you know, rename it and start a new conversation so that you know you can believe in yourself and that it's not uncomfortable for you to be, you know, feminine. You know, grace with grit, you know, works every single time. So I just think that's just such a crazy exercise. Not a single guy raised their hands, which is...
One, yes.
Oh, one. Okay, that's fantastic. Okay, so let's just go back.
But it was probably a compliment when they said it to you.
I just want to go and ask a question, you know, because here we are up here. Have you ever experienced, you know, there's the Me Too, hashtag Me Too phenomenon, not about sexual harassment. Was there a moment in your career, you know, we talk about career pivoting. Was there a moment in your career you felt that you were, I don't want to say the negative, discriminated against? I mean, for me, I've been in business over 35 years, and I never even knew that there was a wage gap. Now I want to look back at my salaries for 35. I probably could get a really big check. I mean, I had no idea that I was paid 79 cents on the dollar. I mean, I sell candy for a dollar to men and 79 cents to women, just saying, to sensationalize the issue, because it's just so stupid. I mean, was there a moment in your career you felt that you were looked over or discriminated against or a stereotype of some sort held you back personally or professionally?
I mean, I think for me, like, the most frustrating thing was it was a man, but it was also a man of color who was not supportive of an opportunity that I was presented in front of a largely white group, and it shocked me because I thought, of all the people, we should be on the same page, like, and support each other. Like, women who don't support women, I know you've heard this, there's a special place in hell for you.
Like, can I reverse that?
Yeah,
can I just reverse it? I say that women that support other women deserve a place in heaven.
Yeah.
So that just we can just
positive,
spin it with positive, the positive.
Positive. Yeah. Sorry, I'm a Scorpio.
No,
I go dark.
That is the quote. We deserve a place in hell. Just saying. Just try to flip
it. That's good. But yeah, like I think that was really probably my most frustrating. And again, like I can't, it's hard to think back on like where it happens, when it happens. You just, I try not to gauge my career by comparing myself to other people. I just try to move forward. If I'm not everyone's cup of tea. And so my suggestion to you is to find your tribe. Like, I found my tribe. I love the people I work with now. I love the people that I worked with, and I was in international television. It was an incredible experience. You just have to, if the fit isn't right, you can't force yourself sometime. Well, anytime. If the fit isn't right, you're not doing yourself, you're doing yourself a disservice by not finding the right place for yourself.
What about you guys?
I have been harassed in many different ways, and there's not only sexual harassment, there's been, you know, verbal harassment, confidence harassment. There's so many different ways that, and there's so many different biases that women have. We do have to be better and harder and work harder, and you're right, women have stabbed me in the back as often as men have. I was very fortunate. I worked for Steven Spielberg for 13 years, and he was very receptive to me going home and having three children. And he did, however, and the company, however, always said after 3 or 4 weeks they'd start calling me, and the rules of family leave were not as clear 30 years ago as they are today. But the truth is, if you find a good boss, you're going to be happier. If you find a bad boss, sometimes you can't leave. Sometimes you have to get into a Me Too situation of one sort or another. The only thing I can say about that is try not to be victimized by it. Try not to, and that's probably your key to resilience, is we've all had crappy things happen to us, and the truth is the statistics for women in the workforce are terrible, and they get worse in the 30s, when you're in your 30s, from 91 cents on the dollar to 68 cents on the dollar for women. It's a precipitous drop in these years of your 30s. But you just got to pick yourself up and say, this is who I am. I want to have a personal life. I want to have a balanced life. I may want to have a family. And the truth is, even if you're not parenting, the statistics are terrible for women. They just get worse because of the mommy halo effect. All I can say, and I think you can speak to this better, is don't victimize yourself. Don't allow yourself to be the sufferer. That's not attractive. It doesn't help. It just creates more of a downward spiral.
I think just for level setting, we start about 50-50 in the workforce. Other than in tech, we start lower. We end at about 17 to 19% in the C-suite. We fall off in middle management, which we call the messy middle. It's when you gain more responsibility at home, more responsibility at work, and, you know, everything, you know, changes from there. So it's how do we push past the messy middle? We only have a couple minutes left, which I'm so sorry to say, because we could sit here and chat forever. But I just want to go lightning round and talk not about the problems, but give me a solution. What do you think we can do so that we can stop talking about this conversation? If you had a workplace wish, what would it be? Give me a workplace wish.
More women in the workplace. The truth is, I was just listening to something on the way here.
Unfortunately, the mic like this.
I got it. Unfortunately, see?
You get a kiss, Walter. Right.
Thank you. I love you. Unfortunately, I was in traffic coming up, but there was a great thing on NPR about women in tech and how you have to start young. And I, thank you, Nadia. I don't know how I got on this women in tech or innovation panel, because I don't know how to, I don't have an Instagram or a Venmo or can't do anything. But I have children who help me and make fun of me constantly for, or block me and then tell me they haven't blocked me and I'm still looking for them. It's unbelievably humiliating. However, I do believe that the best, and what this, these people were saying, is not only do we need to get women and young girls involved in STEM and involved early in the field of tech. We need to have the messy middle relearn coding, re-infiltrate the workforce. We need a stronger mass of women, because it's not about, in my opinion, the 4% of directors at the top that everybody's shining to and complaining about. It's about our flank. It's about the down ticket. It's about all of these women who don't feel satisfied, don't feel sustained and promoted, and drop out. And the hope is that we can get more women back into the engine of these fortresses through corporate returnships, or through them figuring out their own sense of entrepreneurship, or just not giving up and finding some sisterhood, finding Nadia, finding Shelley. These are people that I've just met in the last couple of months, and I'm so impressed and value the fact that there are a few women out there really trying to make a difference, and hopefully that's why you are all here, and hopefully you guys will do the same.
Here's the good news for us. I say you could teach Snapchat, but you can't teach experience. So no matter how old we are, we're still going to be relevant. Thank God. That age sometimes comes into play. Whew. What about you?
Pressure. I have so much to say. I'm an avid reader. I would suggest that instead of spending a lot of time on social media, that you read as well. I think that the women in this room, and men are... it's a really intelligent room. There's a couple of books that I love. One is The Undoing Project. One of my favorite quotes The Undoing Project. One of my favorite quotes from it is that people actively seek out information, that knowledge that they already have, but they avoid new knowledge. So if you're surrounding yourself with people that are like yourself and you're stuck only focusing in a specific vertical that you work in, you might be missing opportunities to stretch. And the other book that I loved is Mindset. It's just changing your mindset. To your point, it's like you can sit here and think about all the ways that people have done you wrong, or you can start creating opportunities that are for you. I know it sounds like I'm being preachy, but that is a fact, and you can do it. You're intelligent, you're strong, you're powerful, you're women, you're here. Like, again, I come from creative. On the technology side, you guys already have like this huge leg up. It's a lot harder to learn the stuff that you guys are doing, and I'm not saying that there's no space for creativity, but try to have more of like a symbiotic relationship, as opposed to creative people need a solution and you go build it. It should be more of a marriage of like, I think that I need to do something like this, and you brainstorm with them. That's the same conversation I carry back to the creative, my creative partners. I think it's just changing the way that we've been working. It doesn't work right now, and it will continue to change. But I think you'll find that on both sides, at least at Fox, where I am, people are really open to changing this narrative. So,
by the way, the best sponsors are people not like you. That is how you grow, how you stretch, and how you learn. And I met this woman, and we're past time, and I want to get to Cheryl to do a closing remark, but I met this woman that talked about a concept called double yourself, and her name is Mary Wells. She's one of the most fascinating women I've ever met in the agency business. She's about 88 years old now, and she said that the only way she stayed interesting was with a philosophy called double yourself. If she read the same kind of books, she started reading different ones. If she went to the same kind of restaurant, she found new ones. If she always had the same kind of friends, she met a new one. She would always find a house in a different neighborhood to, like, guess who's coming to dinner. And she said, and that's how she kept getting interesting. She kept herself interesting because she doubled herself. And it pushed her to stretch and continuously learn and grow. Cheryl, let's wrap before I get in trouble
here.
Okay,
two quick things. One, know who you are. And if you ever doubt who you are and how amazing you are, find somebody who gets it, who knows who you are, and have them remind you. The next thing is, you're going to have dreams, and people who perhaps have failed at those things, or the status quo, the powers that be, are going to try to dissuade you. Don't believe the hype. That's it. Don't believe it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. This was amazing. We've all learned so much from you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't think there's questions, right? I think the speakers will be here throughout the conversation, so you guys can come up and meet them back there or wherever. So thank you so much.